Hello and welcome to Audiobook Connection, behind the scenes with the creative teams. I'm Becky Parker Geist and I'm your host. Audiobook Connection is your place to learn about the audiobook creative process in discussions between the authors, narrators, producers, and post-production teams that bring them all together, as well as guests who have listened to the audiobooks and have questions for the creative teams. This podcast is sponsored by Pro Audio Voices, helping great stories come alive through audiobook production and marketing. Hi, I'm Becky Parker Geist. I am the host of the Audiobook Connection podcast, Behind the Scenes with the Creative Teams. I'm also president of Bay Area Independent Publishers Association and the CEO and founder of Pro Audio Voices and Amplify Audiobooks, providing audiobook and podcast production, distribution, and marketing. And today I have with me Barbara H. Sieber. She's the author of The Empresario's Wife, The Woman at the Center of the Texas Revolution. Barbara is a National Geographic writer and editor and an award-winning feature writer. She is a 30-year veteran of the publishing world. Barbara, welcome.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit more about your background. You've been publishing for a long time, working at National Geographic. That must have been very interesting. But let's back up even just a step further before that, because I love to hear about, like, when you got interested in writing in the first place. Do you even remember?
I do.
All right.
I do.
Tell us.
Well, I grew up in South Central Texas, sort of east of San Antonio and west of Houston, a little town called Seguin. And I was actually, I think, very lucky. I grew up in a house of women. I grew up with my great-grandmother, my grandmother, and my mother, and my grandfather. My mother and father were divorced when I was very young. So I had a magical childhood. And when I had something called the Blue Horse Writing Tablet that I wrote stories in, you know, just little scribble things. Starting when I was about four or five. And of course, I wasn't writing anything, but I was imagining things. And then I would tell my stories to my grandmother, and she was avidly listening and hanging on every word. So what better introduction to writing can a writer have? It seemed very important. I felt my stories were very important because my grandmother thought they were. And my great grandmother taught me to read. So I was very lucky to have that kind of beginning in a big old house that even my great grandmother had grown up in. So it was, yeah, I had a great childhood
and a history in staying put. That's so much less common, yeah. You know, than
I mean, that kind of extended family thing for me was so fabulous. And hardly anybody has that anymore.
Yeah. And was there a lot of reading going on in your household?
Well, my mother was an English teacher.
Okay.
But I think the real thing that I got so hooked on was I adored my grandmother, and I went with her everywhere. And so while my mother was very young, she was in her 20s and busy, and my grandmother just doted on me and took me with her everywhere. So I got to see how things work and how all these different characters and people, and they were all interesting. And so that was a great introduction to just, you know, life in a microcosm. Yeah. So
do you think you were collecting characters at that point when you were young, sort of gathering the data?
Absolutely. I think collecting characters is exactly what my writing is about, because if I'm not interested in the characters, I'm not interested in the book or the TV show or whatever. So character is all for me.
And then as you got older, did you find that your interest in writing was continuing on through school? And I'd love to hear, like, that part of your journey.
And I was lucky. I went to the University of Texas, and for an unbelievably, you know, unimpressive amount. I mean, I think tuition at the University of Texas in the late 60s was $50 a semester or something. Anyhow, yeah. it was great. And I got into some advanced classes early on, and I had a professor who told me, you know, Miss Hurt, you can write. And I thought, because I didn't know what else I could do.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what else I wanted to do.
Yeah. So
then after college, I managed to escape getting married, which most young Texan girls did at that point. I came close, but didn't. And then I went into the Peace Corps. And then I became an English teacher for a while. And then I decided I couldn't take one more year of teaching because the administrators were driving me crazy. So I decided to jump into journalism, and it was very hard to get to go from being an English teacher to becoming a journalist. I had no hopes of working for the Washington Post, but a new magazine was starting. And I had gotten an MA, so I had an MA in English, but a new magazine called Science 80 was starting. And it turned out to be a really good magazine. I got a copy editor job. And from there, worked my way up. And then that got sold to National. It got bought out because suddenly the science magazine marketplace was very crowded. There were suddenly lots of science magazines, and the magazine I worked for did not have a deep pocket. It was sponsored by AAAS, which was a prestigious Association for the Advancement of Science. They published science journals, so it had all the sort of science credentials, but not a deep pocket. Time bought it, had Discover bought it out. And then, then I was like in the market for a job, and I managed to get a job at Geographic. So then I was.
Did that then, when you got that job, were you then traveling quite a bit or not so much?
Not at first. I actually started out in a division called Ed Media, in which we were making CD-ROMs with the graphic pictures.
Yeah, I remember those days.
Yes, yes, yes. And then later I worked for books at Geographic. But yes, I did travel some, but I didn't work for National Geographic Magazine. I worked for two other divisions. But wonderful colleagues and contacts. So in fact, when I was working on my Impresario's Wife book, one of my colleagues at Books said, Barbara, let me read it. And she was editor-in-chief of National Geographic Books. And she said, I know you're working on this novel. I'd love to read it. And I said, oh, okay. And she turned out to be such a fabulous editor. So I was so lucky. She first of all, she was such a good editor. But second of all, she just said, okay, I love it. I just have a question right here. And so it was never like, don't do that. It was, give me a little more here or give me a little more there, you know. So it was a wonderful process. And I love her dearly. And she's just, she's really remarkable editor. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
At what point did you sort of make that decision or feel that urge to write your own book? To get into publishing in that way?
I'd always had it, but I couldn't figure, I wrote all these short stories and sent them off to the New Yorker, and nothing got published.
Uh-huh.
And you know how hard that is.
Yeah.
And so my father had told me that, first of all, I didn't know my father till I was sort of out of college, because my parents were divorced when I was so young. But it turned out to be quite interesting, and he told me that we were related to the DeWitts, that they were lineal descendants. Well, I learned about Green DeWitt in Texas history, but I had no idea it was my grandfather. Anyhow, so he said, you know, we're related to the Green DeWitt. And I'm thinking, as I learned more about it, not a lot of people knew who Green DeWitt was, but I did because I'd learned about Texas impresarios, you know, in Texas history. So I knew he was, you know, sort of one of the founding fathers when Texas began. And I kept thinking, I wonder what her life was like. Mm-hmm. And we didn't talk about her. My father didn't mention, you know, this is who we're descendants of.
Yeah.
And so very slowly over time, I just started reading more about, I mean, it was very early. It was 1820s. There was nothing about her. I mean, nothing. So I had to, you know, I had to grasp at straws. I had to find every little reference I could. And there was the occasional reference when the colony was mentioned and Green DeWitt was mentioned and so forth. And then there would be sort of this afterthought. And she and her children made the Texas flag that started the first battle of the Texas Revolution. Wow, that's pretty important.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And so as I sort of built up this worldview of what was it like in the 1820s over, I mean, I had a full-time job and I had two children and et cetera, so I was not doing it full-time. And I was still trying to get, I was writing magazine articles and other things, but I wasn't really trying to get a book published. And then I did actually publish a couple of nonfiction books. Well, still wanted to, you know, the more I found out about Sarah, she just became more of an obsession with me, I guess. And I have a cousin who I didn't know until the book was published, and he called and said, you don't know me, but I'm your cousin. he said, I've been wondering, in his best Texas, you know, accent, I've been wondering all my life why nobody ever wrote a book about this woman. Why you done it? So, you know, she was sort of known locally, and well, he knew because he was a descendant of, he too was a descendant of Green DeWitt.
Yeah.
So
it sounds like you had this idea for the book and then the impresario's wife book, and you were gradually over many years sort of chipping away at the research. Is that right?
Correct. I was doing a lot of other things.
Sure.
Always there, and you know, I would sort of try when I had time off, which, you know, was like 2 or 3 weeks, and then I would have, I'm not going to spend my whole vacation doing this. So, you know, it took a while.
Yeah. Once you started into that research, tell us a little about that process. Like, did you find, you'd mentioned that there wasn't really much available.
It was all about the battles.
Okay.
You know, I mean, so everybody's where were you? Heard of the Alamo, right?
Mm-hmm,
It was all about the Alamo and what led up the Alamo and the men and the battles and, you know, without a lot of context. And, you know, you just had to sort of piece things together.
Yeah. You know, how did you approach it? Where did you, what were the ways in which you approached that research?
Well, I found as I read over time, there were a lot of facts that I absolutely had to go by. I couldn't omit. And so, I mean, number of children and when they came and how they came and et cetera, et cetera. There were actually a number of facts if you dug around until you found some connection here and some connection there. Well, of course, there were some things that were wrong, that like birth and death dates and things. But I started by making an outline of, you know, what were the timeline, chronological, what happened.
Piecing together the history in that way. Yeah, timeline.
Uh-huh. And then finally, at some point, I just sort of broke away from that because you have to imagine. And I knew that I wanted a picture of life at that time and that it wasn't just white men. And so the fact that there were Native Americans, there were Mexicanos, there were Tejanos, there was all these cultures that were already there, and you know, you never heard about, or so.
Interesting. Okay. So as you were piecing all of this together then and starting to get a sense of that history that was, I gather, was like accumulating as you did your research. And then what would you say is the, if there is a particular aspect of her life that you feel like most drew you in?
Well, I have this wonderful aunt who is turning 100 in October. And she lived in Gonzales, the little town. I don't know if you've read the book, but the hub of the colony was Gonzales. She was about 30 miles from where I grew up. And so, you know, my aunt, she'd been a part of our family for a long time. And she was president of the Historical Society. She was very proud of Gonzales's history. And so she took me to places and talked about things because she was very proud of Gonzales and the role it had played in the, you know, the whole birth of Texas. And so, you know, when she actually took me to places that it was thought that where the DeWitts had lived, it was like, oh, wow. You know, I was really like, electrified by that.
Right. Because sort of brought it home to you in a physical way. Is that right?
Right. I mean, it was right here. You know, it was right there. It's the past is not gone. It's
right. Yeah. Interesting. So, yeah, what I would love to do, let's actually just take a short pause. I want to come back after the break, and then let's talk about the audiobook process, because I love for our listeners to learn more about your experience with that process. So we'll take a short pause. And we'll be right back. 2025 winner of the IPPI Awards, Best Regional Fiction, The Empresario's Wife. Quote, "This is a story of female grit and determination in the face of overwhelming challenges. There is enough romance, tragedy, and excitement to keep the pages turning. An engrossing, drama-fueled addition to Lone Star State Chronicles." End quote by Kirkus Reviews, 2025. It's 1827, and Sarah Seeley DeWitt finds herself at the center of Texas history in its earliest and bloodiest period. Sarah's journey from St. Louis to Texas catches her up in a love triangle, forces her into a struggle for her family's survival, and pitches her headlong into the whirlwind of war. Based on actual events leading up to the 1836 Texas Revolution, The Empresario's Wife chronicles the struggles of a young American everywoman and the events that changed her and the nation forever. Get your copy of The Empresario's Wife, The Woman at the Center of the Texas Revolution on Amplify Audiobooks today. All right, so coming back to the audiobook process, you chose Jen McCool as your narrator. Tell us first a little bit about what your experience was like in that selection of the narrator. If you can remember back, but, you know, your thoughts about the kinds of qualities that you were listening for as you were listening to the different auditions.
Okay. Well, first of all, I was a total novice. I myself have never listened to an audiobook. And my son listens to them all the time. Many of my friends do, but I'm just a like to have the book in my hand kind of reader. And so the process of finding a narrator was really, for me, sort of mysterious. So we started listening to, you know, through your staff, we started, because I think my husband had a connection with you from earlier. So we started listening to, you know, little samples of people reading things. And you know, I think we listened to 9 different people, and then we whittled it down to 6 and then down to 3. But the quality of Jennifer McCool's voice to me was the closest to what I imagined Sarah would sound like.
Yeah.
It was a sort of calm, patient, empathetic, solid, but it was at the same time soothing, and you could listen. I could imagine listening to it for longer than a minute. And so I think it was, you know, that quality of voice that she exhibited.
Yeah. Did you find it hard to narrow it down?
Yes.
You say you whittled it down. Yeah.
The last three. I think you were part of the, you were part of the last three.
All good. All good. Yeah. Yeah. Great. And now you've been through the full production process of the audiobook, and since this was new to you, as you said, I love having authors share things that maybe surprised them or that, you know, they didn't expect, because there are other, you know, many of our listeners are authors sort of deciding about the process. So I like to give them insight from others as to what jumped out at you.
Well, for one thing, I just didn't know anything about the ins and outs, but it was much more arduous than I expected, because in my... I wouldn't have named a character Eugenio if I know how hard it would be. It must be his name right. I speak Spanish, so he might have been Juan instead of Eugenio. But I think I and a friend of mine who from Geographic who had been through narrations in the studio, you know, we sort of yearned for the fact that to be in the studio with the person and say, no, it's not this, it's this. And some of these things are just so regional. They're not wrong. They are simply a regional variation. And, you know, since actually the book won the Ippy Award for Best Regional. So I'm glad that we tried to make sure that we got all the regional things right. But I think, you know, we probably could have handled that better if I had just done a long recorded list of here, this is the, you know, these are, it just, you know, it went on and on in terms of things that she had trouble with, because I didn't anticipate that would be a problem, you know.
So just to clarify for our listeners, so some of the things that we're talking about in terms of regionalisms, things like the use of either versus neither, things like that, and really specific...
rather than whatever...
Little pronunciations. So just to highlight for our listeners the importance and value of taking the time to really get clear on, you know, what things like that, if your book is, especially if it's set regionally, you know, I'm very specific region, that matters to you, that's an important thing to bring up with, you know, and to make clear in that early process, you know, without going into, you know, too far into the weeds, just to say that we ended up, after the first pass of recording, there were quite a number of pickups or, you know, like re-record on names and things that we had to wade through and sort out, and which were important and which ones weren't. And, you know, again, I like to let listeners know, like, what are some of these aha moments or discoveries that we can, anything we can learn from in the process to make it easier for them as they move forward. And then I'd also love to hear about, like, what your aspirations moving forward with the audiobook and book. What's coming up for you? What would you like to have happen?
In terms of takeaways, sort of?
Yeah, well, if you have any more, but also just with the book and the audiobook, like, what's coming up next for you? Maybe if you're writing a sequel, or it could be if you have... big plans for The Empresario's Wife that you'd like to share. I know that, you know, we'll be seeking some further reviews, more editorial kinds of reviews as well. And it's already won awards, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Of course, as much exposure as possible. You know, there does seem to be a little bit of film interest at this point, so we'll see where that goes. But I guess... You know, in my I don't really know what to expect in terms of the audiobook, but I think in terms of takeaways, I think that it's really important The role of women and the role of diversity in various cultures in our history and in our lives. I mean, look at the turmoil we're in right now about diversity and women. And, you know, it's sort of very important to me that however people get this message, whether it's orally or through visually, through reading, this struggle didn't start, you know, in the 60s. It didn't start in the 20s. It started, and so many
generations ago. Yeah.
So many people have told me, I had no idea that this was an important chunk of our history.
Mm, yeah.
It just seemed like some obscure something.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it is very much a part of the American story, that the whole push west, how the West was won. Well, it was won by women and foreigners. And so that, and the fact that the past is not past, we build on it. And again, I've heard from so many people how much they appreciated the quote at the beginning, the George Eliot quote. And it's because it's about unsung heroines and our heroes. There's the unsung in our life, in our lives, that make our lives better, and that we, you know, don't always get credit, and that often don't get credit. And so those are sort of the powerful messages I want the next generation of readers to understand.
Yeah, good, good. And how can our listeners learn more about you and your writing? Could you share your website?
Yes, it's barbarasieber.com.
And Sieber is S-E-E-B-E-R.
Mm-hmm. Well, and yep. on Pro Audio Voices on your platforms.
Yes. Yes, and the Empresario's Wife, at the time that we release this, it will be available on Amplify Audiobooks. We always encourage our listeners to get it there so that they can build connection with you.
You know, it's on Amazon. It will be available audibly through there. And
that's right.
There are a lot of reviews, custom reviews on Amazon, as well as a lot of reviews on my website and lots of information about me.
Yeah, great. Well, Barbara, I want to thank you so much for being with me. Barbara Sieber, the author of The Empresario's Wife and more. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for Audiobook Connection, behind the scenes with the creative teams. Please take a moment to subscribe at audiobookconnection.com. The podcast is sponsored by Pro Audio Voices, helping great stories come alive through audiobook production and marketing. Learn more at proaudiovoices.com. Again, thanks for being with us, and please join us next week.